From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There's been a lot of talk over the last few days about this commentary read at local television stations owned by the Sinclair Broadcast Group. For the past several weeks now, this statement has been airing. It sounds like a public service announcement, and it warns viewers about fake news and about stories influenced by personal bias. This isn't the first time a statement like that is aired on Sinclair stations. In fact, it happens all the time. But what was different this time was that Sinclair had forced journalists, the anchors of their news programs, to read it. And what caught everyone's attention was when an editor at Deadspin put together a mashup of dozens of these forced reads. Today in the program, we're talking about what is wrong with this, and we'll also explore the political and corporate agenda of Sinclair. We invite you to join us after the news.
We understand that the 24-hour news cycle can be pretty exhausting. At KUER, we push beyond the cycle, challenging our listeners and ourselves to break through the echo chamber, get away from the soundbite. When you tune into KUER, you hear stories that matter to Utah and around the world, stories that put the news in context and broaden your perspective. Please support KUER's spring fund drive. Make your gift at KUER.org, and thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The Mother Jones reporter Andy Kroll says back in 2004, in fact, the day after the election that year, the media critic Jay Rosen wrote a piece where he said, "Keep your eye on Sinclair Broadcasting." He described it as a new kind of media company, a political empire, he wrote, with television stations. The Sinclair Broadcast Group owns 193 stations around the country. And they want to own more, but right now you can find a Sinclair station in mostly mid-market places like Boise and Fresno and Bakersfield in Salt Lake City. Sinclair owns the station KUTV here. And last month, KUTV started airing a recorded commentary read by Shauna Lake and Mark Cobell, the anchors of the KUTV weekday evening newscasts. The commentary was scripted by the Sinclair Corporate Office, a company whose leaders are known for having a right-wing political agenda. And the statement has been running regularly. It warns about fake news and stories influenced by personal bias. But as you probably know by now, it didn't just air here. In fact, it aired on Sinclair stations around the country. And we know this because, in part, an editor at the news website Deadspin put together a mashup of dozens of these commentaries being read all over the country. This is what it sounds like.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
Unfortunately, some members of the media.
So today in the program, we're talking about this story, about the ethics of forcing news reporters to read statements like this and the political agenda behind the Sinclair Broadcast Group. Joining us first on the program is Andy Kroll. He's an investigative journalist at Mother Jones, and he has reported extensively on the Sinclair Broadcast Group. We have links to his articles, by the way, on our website. We'll tell you more about that a little bit later. He's joining us today from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C., and Andy Kroll, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Doug.
I should also point out we did invite both Sinclair Broadcasting Group and KUTV2 to join us on the program today. Didn't hear back from Sinclair directly. I want to read something from Kent Crawford, the general manager at KUTV, who responded in an email response. He said he wasn't available to join us on the program today, but he did say that the journalists at the station are committed to fair and objective reporting in pursuit of the truth, and that the station adheres to the highest standards of accuracy and fact-checking, though he didn't address the compulsory commentary demanded by Sinclair. That out of the way. Andy Kroll, I want to start with, we should mention something that you've been writing about, which is, this is in fact not the first time a commentary like this has aired. There was one last year, but read by an executive of the company.
That's right. About a year ago this time, Scott Livingston, who is the top executive at Sinclair for news programming and a longtime Sinclair employee, appeared on Sinclair stations around the country, talking straight to the camera and delivering a really similar message as we saw, as we heard with these anchors in that video clip that you just played a moment ago. In fact, some of the language that Scott Livingston read on air last year mirrors the image, the language we're hearing now, almost identically, especially this notion of journalists out there using their platforms to, you know, promote their bias and to, quote, control exactly what you meaning the viewer, think. So this is not the first time they've done this.
Read between the lines of the statement. What are they saying when they refer to fake news or false news and personal bias? What are they getting at?
They're getting at a media that has covered this president, that has covered this administration, and that in some cases has covered Sinclair Broadcast Group in a tough, fair, aggressive, you know, an accountability-focused manner. I mean, that's reporting that I've done, that's reporting that the New York Times has done, that's reporting that news organizations, public radio stations, websites around the country have done since the election of this president. And since we have seen Sinclair Broadcast Group, especially coming out of its corporate office outside of Baltimore, seeming to support this president in its hires and in its coverage and to attack other news outlets that are digging in and investigating and trying to hold the powerful accountable.
Let's back up and look broadly at this story that you write about. First of all, let's start with the scope and the size of this Sinclair empire. I think it's probably fair to call it that. 193 stations. And where do we find them? I guess they're everywhere in the country.
They are everywhere. They are in mostly in mid-market, in smaller markets around the country. They are in most states of this nation. And the important thing to understand about Sinclair is that it is not a household name, at least it wasn't until possibly recently, in the way that Fox News is. Fox News is a channel on the dial, on your cable box. You pull up your cable, you go to the guide, you know where Fox is, or you punch in the number because you know it by heart. When you turn on a Sinclair broadcast station, you do not see Sinclair broadcast in the right-hand corner. Yeah. Left-hand corner, you see an NBC logo, an ABC logo, in some cases a Fox logo, and you see the four letters of the call station and the familiar faces of your local anchors. Sinclair owns and operates these stations, but you do not see that firsthand. The way you see this is either you know your way through Securities Exchange Commission filing, or you see content and programming come down in the form of these must-run segments, and then you connect that with what you're reading in the news. But this is not an obvious thing, and that is why Sinclair has operated below the radar for quite a while. Every once in a while, its name pops up in the news, but it has operated below the radar for quite a while until now.
As a strategy under the wire?
Yeah. I do think as a strategy. If you look at comments made by David Smith, one of the founders of the company, the longtime CEO, he's now executive chairman, you know, one of the majority owners of the company, he has talked about how he doesn't want to have a lot of attention. He is more than happy flying under the radar, acquiring television stations around the country, and as you put it, really building this local television empire around the United States. I think what's changed now is that Sinclair has gotten so big, it has gotten so brazen in its seeming support of President Trump and his administration that it can't fly under the radar any longer.
We should point out, as you do in your article, that two out of every five American homes has access to a Sinclair local television station. So the reach, that's significant.
Oh, it's huge reach. Sinclair is the largest local television company in this country, which means that it has a tremendous influence on the kinds of stories that get seen by, as you point out, nearly 40% of Americans. And that reach is poised to grow if a merger currently under consideration with the FCC, with Tribune Media, is approved. And that would expand Sinclair's reach to nearly three quarters of American households. And that's something we can talk about later if you'd like. But we'll that is currently underway, and that's a huge part of this story right now.
Let's talk about the Smith brothers. David Smith, you mentioned, executive chairman of the company. Four brothers control the company, I guess. Who are they, and when did they start all of this? I guess it goes back to, what was it, 1971?
That's right, yeah. It comes down through their father, who was an engineer and a technical fellow who, you know, was interested in you know, broadcast and airwaves and in antennas and technology and things like that. And he passed on to his sons, largely, though, to David Smith, again, the former CEO and now executive chairman, a couple of television stations. This was the farthest thing from a local TV empire.
Right.
But David Smith, while he was interested in the technical aspects of the business as well, he had much bigger plans. And the, you know, these brothers, I should say, are based out of the Baltimore, Maryland area. That is where one of the first stations was. And then there was also an early one in Pittsburgh. And David Smith sets out to use every tactic in the local TV toolbox, if you will, as well as some tactics that he pioneered to grow this company into a force in the broadcast local television business, acquiring stations one by one, two by two, acquiring rival companies, getting into, you know, mergers worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He is, in his own way, almost a Rupert Murdoch-like figure, except he's a Rupert Murdoch-like figure in the local television business, not in the international television, movie-making, satellite television operation that Rupert Murdoch is.
There's an element in the piece that you write about that could seem tawdry, although I think it's kind of significant. There was a moment in the mid-90s when David Smith was arrested for soliciting a prostitute in a police sting. And I think what's interesting about the story beyond the tawdry stuff is that he actually enlisted his stations, as you point out in your article, to basically do his community service.
That's right. In that episode stands out in my mind, looking back from 2018 in with the benefit of decades more of experience, in that this was the an early indication of a pattern, of a practice in which David Smith and the executives at Sinclair would use their television stations and their anchors and the resources of the company for purposes that did not seem to line up with providing rigorous, valuable, actionable local news, weather, traffic, etc., for their audiences around the country. I mean, I've written about another instance in which an employee, a producer at a Sinclair company, was tasked with creating a sort of homage roast video for the sitting governor of Maryland at the time, who was a Republican and who was friendly with Sinclair. And this producer in question said in a deposition, in a court case, that he had, on company time and using company resources, made this homage video for a political event for the Republican governor of Maryland. And again, it's hard to see how that connects with local news, but it does connect with this notion of using these stations for political purposes, for personal purposes, for something beyond local television and informing those audiences around the country.
We should probably point out, as you mentioned in your article, that the Smith brothers became active in political activities and lobbying and funding political campaigns in the late 90s, early 2000s. And we should say they gave money to Republicans and Democrats as well.
That's right. In the pattern that I that comes out of that political giving to me is that the Smith brothers looked for members of members of Congress and locally elected officials as well, talking about the governor of Maryland just a second ago, who could be helpful in Sinclair's efforts to grow and to acquire more stations and to grapple with the existing ownership rules and other communications and broadcast laws on the books that would inhibit that growth. And so, as you point out, a majority of this money went to Republicans, and Republicans, in many cases, in turn, took up the issues that Sinclair cared about and wrote letters to the FCC asking why a merger had been held up or why this rule, you know, was being enforced or so on. But there was another case in my reporting as well in which Barbara Mikulski, Democratic senator, storied figure in the United States Senate, took up the cause and went to bat for Sinclair as well. And she received money from the Smith brothers. So the money went both ways, and it seemed to be more about this growth than it did about any kind of personal ideology.
The Iraq War and 9/11, these seem to be kind of turning points for using the stations in a more aggressive way to convey political messages. Around that time, you say the political content became more strident and became more frequent, I guess?
Yeah, it seemed that the attacks of September 11th and the beginning of the Iraq War a year and some months later really brought a political tint, a political flavor voice to the company in a way that didn't seem to be there before. I mean, after September 11th, anchors at some Sinclair stations were told to read on air. Some were told to read on air, and in other cases, it was general managers, I believe, were told to read on air essentially a statement supporting President Bush and saying that what President Bush was, that this was an attack on our country, and that what President Bush was saying we needed to support and we needed to be patriotic. And in some ways, this as well was a sort of a preview to these statements that we're talking about now, these anchors railing against fake news. And you continued to see this going up to 2004 as well, that election. Sinclair, you know, it was reported that Sinclair was going to run a documentary that was widely seen as anti-John Kerry, the Democratic candidate, U.S. senator. That documentary ended up getting changed pretty significantly, and that was after Sinclair's political correspondent, John Lieberman, went public with his concerns about this documentary. He was fired and later sued in court. So the 2000s in the Bush years really were when we first saw this political bent come to the fore and become very public with Sinclair.
Talk about these so-called must runs. Basically, they're creating content and in some cases national news content and sending it to the Sinclair stations throughout the country and requiring them to run this. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, the national coverage, but also these commentaries, because they send these commentaries to the stations and they're posted as must runs. You have to run them as part of your relationship with the company.
That's right. Must runs are not entirely unheard of in the local TV business, but the way it's been described to me by basically everyone I spoke to who's knowledgeable or who's worked in the business is that must runs typically were the general manager goes on the air for a minute or a minute and a half and says, our station won this award. We want to, we couldn't have done it without our viewers. Thank you so much. It was pretty gauzy, low stakes, self-congratulatory stuff. And then that's perfectly fine. But what we saw with Sinclair starting around the early to mid 2000s and continuing up to this very day were must-run segments that were hard-edged political commentary. And that began with a fellow named Mark Hyman. He was an executive at Sinclair. He was Sinclair's lobbyist, their in-house lobbyist. He was put on the air and became this reliably hard-edged conservative voice, defending the Bush administration, attacking Democrats, attacking liberals. And that has continued with Mark Hyman. He will more recently rail against political correctness on college campuses. He will talk about quote unquote snowflakes, which is, this sort of bizarre term that floats around on the internet. And this again is something that has only become more prominent at Sinclair. Today, the most widely seen, maybe notorious is the right way to put it, must-run segments are by a fellow named Boris Epstein. Mm-hmm. He is a former Trump campaign aide. Then he was in the Trump White House briefly as a special assistant. And then in April, I believe it was, a few months after President Trump's inauguration, Boris Epstein is hired by Sinclair as its chief political analyst. You can see him every day during the news segments on Sinclair stations. It's, his segment is called Bottom Line with Boris. And these are minute, 30-second long segments that are just so reliably pro-Trump, so reliably pro-administration. Basically, he finds any possible way to put a positive spin on what's happening with the Trump presidency. Or if he's not, he's attacking media outlets for being fake news and for not reporting accurately on this president. The TV critic of the Baltimore Sun wrote last year that Boris Epstein's segments were, quote, as close to propaganda as I have seen in 30 or 40 years of reviewing television.
I mentioned we invited someone from Sinclair to join us. Of course, they turned us down. But Sinclair's senior vice president, Scott Livingston, did release a statement this week after all of this furor and reaction to it. I want to read some of it and get you to react to it. What he writes is, we aren't sure of the motivation for the criticism, but find it curious that we would be attacked for asking our news people to remind their audiences that unsubstantiated stories exist on social media, which result in an ill-informed public with potentially dangerous consequences. Give me a sense of, well, two things, I think, in relationship to that, Andy. What is wrong with these kinds of statements? And how do you respond to what Scott Livingston is trying to say in his reaction?
What's wrong with these statements is twofold. One is that they are pre-scripted and handed down from on high, as it were, within Sinclair Broadcast Group, to local stations, and they are told, you have to read these statements. There is no question. I don't think the explicit conversation of, you know, or else it's your job is brought in, but I'm sure that it is implicit that these anchors know they need to get in front of that camera and read this statement. So I think that's one issue, is that this is cookie cutter commentary written by corporate executives passed down to local stations around the country. I think the other part, the other thing I would respond to, at least with Scott Livingston's statement, is I think it's disingenuous on several levels. One is, while we're not concerned about what the outrage is about, I mean, they know what the outrage is about. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is read the internet for 5 minutes and you'll know what the outrage is about. Yeah. Local anchors around the country are being used to effectively launder the views of the higher-ups at Sinclair Broadcast Group, and they're sending that out to tens of millions of TV viewers. People are outraged about that. That's not rocket science. The other thing that I would say about Scott Livingston's statement is that this script, the one that he read a year ago and the one the anchors read recently, it's not just about rumors on social media. This language crafted by Sinclair talks about false news stories. It talks about mainstream media and journalists who are biased and using their platforms, again, to, quote, control exactly what you think. This is not just saying, hey, there is a fake news problem on Twitter, there is a fake news problem on Google, there's a fake news problem on Facebook. This is going much, much past that. Yeah. And so to just say, oh, well, we're just warning people about what's on social media, I think that's being disingenuous on his part.
I want to also point out something you write in your piece. You point out there is a significant difference between Fox News and these Sinclair stations, in the sense that Fox is at least upfront, for the most part, about its ideological perspective. Whereas you say Sinclair stations, they basically slip in these political commentaries, as you put it in your piece, between the weather and the local sports.
That's right. And they give that, you know, the way that they present these commentaries, whether it's Boris Epstein, whether it's these anchor statements or Scott Livingston's statement, by inserting them in the local news and insisting that local stations do that during times of day when people are watching the news, it gives these messages a sheen of respectability and value, and that they are on the same level as the traffic or local news, what happened at the last city council meeting, or the weather, or the local sports. I mean, these are things that people turn to local news for, and you're putting right in the middle of that Boris Epstein saying that all of these individuals who are leaving or being fired from the Trump administration is a good thing. It's a sign of a healthy administration. I mean, there's a disingenuousness to this that at least Fox News, you go there, you know what you're getting, you know the anchors, you know the shows. Sinclair is a totally different model altogether. And again, in a time when local news, believe it or not, in the age of Facebook and Twitter and Google, local news still remains a valuable source of information for Americans around the country, especially for what's going on in their community. And to then use that to put these statements in there is a whole new model.
This is part of the piece that you've written, just how much local news actually shapes public opinion. And you quote one attorney with Georgetown's Communications and Technology Law Clinic as saying that local news, for a lot of Americans, is the most important force shaping public opinion. So that idea of local news and the influence that it's having is pretty significant, certainly for a significant portion of the population, certainly the older group, but it seems significant.
Yeah, and I think that as Facebook and the other social media companies have gobbled up so much of the advertising dollars in this country, and people in their local communities around the country increasingly turn to public radio, obviously, and also local television. And it is, I mean, even among, I'm 32 years old, even among people of my generation, sometimes we'll go on Facebook and we'll still get the local news there, or we'll use Facebook to get local news. I mean, even if it's, you know, runs on the local ABC affiliate or NBC affiliate, what have you, it's still part of our conversation on Facebook or on the ways in which we get news. And so local news is still, local TV is still a really important part of the diet. And you have a company now poised to have its stations and its programming, its must-run segments, its anchor-delivered, quote, hostage videos, as some people have described these anchor statements, going into as many as three-quarters of American households. I mean, this is a real issue for informed local communities and the future of local television.
We're running out of time. I want to get to two things quickly. We need to mention that there are some at least one station in Madison, Wisconsin, that was a conscientious objector to all of this, apparently. What do we know about that? Do you know anything about that?
We know that the Fox station in Fox affiliate in Madison posted a message on Twitter, a statement on Twitter, speaking for the entire station, saying, "We didn't run this. We're sticking with local news, local sports, local weather, because that's what our viewers want." The Fox station in Madison, a liberal readout, if there ever was one, can probably get away with that. We are not seeing that at many other stations. We're not seeing public on-the-record rebuttals or repudiations from many Sinclair employees. And, frankly, that's because Sinclair is known for its tough contracts. It's known for cracking down on employees who speak out. I know this because I report on the company and I've seen it firsthand. So I think that partly explains why there hasn't been more of a public backlash among Sinclair stations and employees.
Andy, finally, take a moment, if you would, and talk a little bit about the effort by Sinclair to close this $3.9 billion deal to buy Tribune Media. We should point out, as you do in your article, that after the election in 2016, David Smith told an audience that the new Trump administration was, quote, a really serious opportunity to seek complete deregulation. Say something finally about that.
That complete deregulation is well underway. The Trump-led Federal Communications Commission has made one rule change after another about ownership and about how many properties, media properties, can be owned in one market and so on. They have knocked down one barrier after another to Sinclair's expansion. And right now, Sinclair is on its way to what many see as a crowning moment for David Smith and his company, acquiring Tribune Media for $4 billion. And this would put Sinclair in Chicago, New York City, in Los Angeles, the three biggest media markets in the country. That deal is not yet done. The FCC is still considering it. It is not a fait accompli entirely. But the indications we have now is that the deal is likely to go through with some tweaks around the edges. And that would bring Sinclair to a level that it has never been, to a prominence and a size that it has never been, and put it in those top three media markets, which the company has never done before. So this would be a huge, huge move for them if it's approved.
It's Andy Kroll. He's an investigative reporter at Mother Jones. For links to his reporting on Sinclair Broadcasting, you should go to our website, radiowest.org. He joined us from the studios of NPR in Washington. Andy Kroll, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Beginning late last month, the country's largest broadcaster, Sinclair Broadcast Group, forced news anchors on nearly 200 television stations to record a scripted commentary decrying the fake news and biased reporting produced by other outlets. Here in Salt Lake City, TV station KUTV2 has aired the commentary more than a dozen times, which has been followed with concern, in some cases outrage. So today in the program, we're talking about the controversy, the ethics, and the agenda of Sinclair Broadcasting. Joining us now on the program is Whitney Evans, a reporter here at KUER News. She has reported on this story just recently. And Whitney, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you say in your piece that some of the employees at KUTV, which is owned by Sinclair, of course, are, here's how you put it, dismayed and embarrassed by the commentary. Explain how you know this.
There is a source within the station that I am speaking to who needs to remain anonymous for some obvious reasons. Yep. But those are the exact words that this source is using to describe sort of the mood at the station right now. I don't think anybody can get past the irony of some of the statements, some of what has been said inside of this statement that anchors were required to read. Things like, our commitment to factual reporting is the foundation of our integrity. It sounds like a fun drive pitch.
Good point.
But when we get to the point when it starts talking about some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think, it's that kind of message that starts to concern people a little bit. And from what I understand, the people who read this at KUTV2 mm-hmm. weren't happy about reading it.
You mentioned in your piece that this concern and this kind of embarrassment goes all the way up to management. So it sounds like morale is somewhat low right now, at least in that respect.
Absolutely. And I will say I have not heard from management other than the statement that you read at the beginning of this show.
Can I just point this out again? Because, again, we heard from Kent Crawford, general manager at KUTV, didn't directly, by the way, respond to these commentaries being read. But he did say that journalists at the station, and I'll quote it again, committed to fair and objective reporting in pursuit of the truth, and that the station is adhering to the highest standards of accuracy and fact-checking. But, you know, what is he going to say? I guess it's difficult. I'm not sure how. Did you get a sense from the person you were talking to about whether or not there was much in the way of leeway? Was there negotiation about all of this?
There's been some negotiation, it sounds like, but not much. There's not a lot of wiggle room. And I have to add that it's more than just this statement. Andy Kroll was talking about earlier in the segment, stations that are owned by Sinclair have been forced to air these must-run stories for a long time. Yeah. KUTV has been owned by Sinclair since 2011,
right. And
they've had to air numerous segments that have heavy conservative anti-immigration talking points. The source I spoke to pointed to one particular story that aired on KUTV that was about how Sweden had a rise in violent crime, and the reporter in the story got a police officer in the streets to talk about how it's likely due to Syrian refugees and immigrants from other countries who caused that crime spike. And the source that I talked to said, we had to air the package in full. We couldn't edit this package. But our workaround was that when we did air the package, our anchors, our local anchors came out in the end and gave sort of another angle in addition, wow. Sort of like an out cue.
That was a particular motif that you heard on conservative media at the time of a particular immigration story, was that immigrants were coming in and they were violent. And so I'm guessing this was part of a a theme that you got. And this is produced by the National News Desk. This is something Andy Kroll has been writing about, that they that Sinclair has this National News Desk that produces these pieces apparently that KUTV aired. How do we know it went down? When they first got word that they were supposed to do this, apparently you said that Sinclair did some polling to see how it might play at various places. And
I don't know specifically how this went down, but it's my understanding that Sinclair tested this promo on something like a focus group in Utah. And this was before it actually aired. And they said it tested exceptionally well in the state. So they got some people together in the state. They had the local anchors pre-record this spot, and they showed it to this group, and it did really well among the people who were in the group.
They liked what they said. It made sense to them. And so they're market testing some of these. That sounds interesting.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. You've said that the KUTV, the reporters there, they asked to change a word from fake news to false news.
Yes. And after I've listened to a couple of other stations in other states, it sounds like that was an issue in other states as well. Some stations did use the term fake news. Others used the term false news. And obviously that's because it has heavy connotations.
For sure.
It's very much language that that's commonly heard from right-wing commentators and the president himself.
You have said, Whitney, that some at the station, according to this source, are so embarrassed or troubled by it that they've reached this point of self-loathing. Would you talk a little bit about this? Because, and then maybe you could talk about what you've learned from this source or others who are talking about this, about if you're a reporter in Utah and you're bound in some cases by these non-compete clauses, what you do if you want to make a principled stance, and how some of these people are talking about this and managing how they get out of it or how they manage to do it. What are you hearing about that?
I'm hearing that there's really not a lot of wiggle room. These TV contracts are really no joke. Some come with huge financial penalties for quitting early. And these non-compete clauses prohibit employees from working for a competitor within a certain time frame. Maybe that's a year.
Now, we should also point out lawmakers have been trying to deal with this non-compete clause thing. It was an issue at the legislature this year, and they in fact did pass a bill, but it only refers to reporters sort of on the lower salary ranks.
It's not going to have any effect on the anchors, I assume, that are actually reading this statement, who make more than what that bill addressed, than the limits put on people who make, then I believe it's less than $50,000 or less than $45,000 a year.
One of the things we were talking about with Andy was the influence that local news has on still a significant, you know, portion of the population. You talked with the Alliance for Better Utah, which has been sort of tracking what might be the impact, or at least how many people are seeing something like this. What can you say about that?
Well, Sinclair already reaches 30% to 40% of American TV viewers. I know Alliance for Better Utah is very concerned about Sinclair potentially purchasing Tribune Media Company. Yeah. And if they do purchase Tribune Media Company, which it looks like they are about to do, they could be reaching up to 80% of viewers.
And we should say, okay, so Sinclair owns KUTV. They also own a couple of stations in southern Utah, St. George.
But I'm actually not. I'm not sure if those stations. I assume they were, because it sounds like every station was required to air this this promo. But I didn't see those stations actually air that promo.
If they are able to buy Tribune Media, which is still a question, as Andy Kroll mentioned, very much up in the air, it means they would own one more station in Utah and Salt Lake.
Potentially.
Potentially Fox 13, which is owned by Tribune Media right now.
Yes. But it sounds like as part of the negotiations with the FCC, the Sinclair may not actually include Fox 13 in Utah as part of that agreement. So Fox 13 would not be owned by Sinclair if that merger were to happen.
What's been the response here in Utah so far? I mean, I know it's early in this story for your reporting. Can you tell how the public is responding? I mean, you talked to a progressive advocacy group about all of this. We mentioned, what kind of reaction are we getting? Can you tell right now?
Well, KUTV is getting emails and phone calls from the public. They're angry. There's a lot of vitriol toward KUTV reporters and anchors. And
did you mention somebody was throwing tomatoes at the station?
No. That would be a good addition to the story.
That would be. I'm not sure where I heard that. but they're getting responses that
they're getting responses.
Violent,
yes,
or not violent. I shouldn't say. But
they're
angry.
They're very upset, and you know the problem is the problem with this statement is that it perpetuates distrust in the media, and that's something that local news media especially cannot afford to have. And you've got real reporters who are trying to do good work, and they mean well, and they want to do the right thing. And I can tell you this from my source, that they feel a lot of guilt that they have to stay in this position.
Let me just say, here's a comment from a listener on our website that we received recently. I will not ever watch KUTV News again. How am I supposed to believe a word they say? I find it hilarious that they should say they fact-check these stories. I never believed that I would live in a country that would have propaganda on its news. It's disgusting, this person mentioned. So you're hearing people, they're pretty emotional about this.
Absolutely. But again, my source says they've never been pressured to skew local coverage to favor the president or conservative talking points.
That's a good point. Let's underline that. They're saying they're not being influenced to do reporting in favor of conservatives, say, for example, in local stories and the legislature and things like that. Is that
right? At least not right now.
Yeah.
But there's some concern that this overreach is a slow trickle, and it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get more dire. But right now, there's no sense that their local reporting is controlled by the folks up top.
It's KUER's Whitney Evans, a reporter in the newsroom. Whitney, thanks.
Thank you.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Tim Slover directs the show. Our thanks also to Claire Jones. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.